Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Good morning across the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. I'm Todd Albaugh. It is Wednesday, hump day, the 1st of February, 2023. 1st of February already. We're into a brand new month, brand new day. The sun is out, at least here in Madison. Not sure what it is up in Lake Wissota, beautiful Lake Wissota, up in north central Wisconsin. Do you call it north central or northwest, Pat Kreitler?
Absolutely. Northwest Wisconsin. All right, very good. We're on the borderline between northwest Wisconsin and west central Wisconsin. Right, and it's much like what defines up north. You're going to get a fight no matter what.
So. Usually I think it's Highway 29 north. Is that
it
fair?
Is. The correct answer is 29. Yeah. Now, other people will say 10 or 8 or whatever, but the correct answer is 29. That's the official view of Up North News.
The host of Up North News, Pat Kreitler, on this very network from 6 until 8 every single morning, Monday through Friday, joins us as always on Crossover Wednesday. Pat, good to see you as always. How are things up in Lake Wissota?
You, sir. You as well. Sunny, cold. But again, another beautiful day in Wisconsin, as they all are.
Absolutely. In true crossover form, one of the reasons we do this on Wednesday is we like to have you listen to Pat's show, and then we kind of bring up a topic on his show, and we cross it over into this program for a couple of minutes to start out. And Pat chose to go to UW Richland. A topic we've talked about on this program, and the reason, not just locally in Richland Center, but it's an issue statewide, particularly for Amory, which goes into Rice Lake and UW-Barron County, and in Wausau, which used to be UW-Marathon County, and now I guess it's known as UW-Stevens Point Wausau. But this is a statewide issue, and because we have universities all over the state, and of course the proposed closure of the UW Richland campus. There was a town hall meeting last week on Thursday. State representative Tony Kurtz, State Senator Howard Markline, and Vice President of University Relations for the UW system, Jeff Barrant, was there as well. And full disclosure, Jeff was a staffer on Pat's Senate staff when he was in the State Senate. And I've known Jeff for a long time. When he was Chief of Staff to Bob Jauch, we worked together on mining legislation in northern Wisconsin in a bipartisan way. Our bosses, of course, got the win, but as he knows, Pat knows, a lot of staff work goes into that as well. And we work together. I think he's a great guy. I was just surprised that when I asked him a direct question, and I said this on the record because I don't believe in gotcha politics. I said, look, I got this little show. I want to know on the record when did you tell these guys? When did you tell them about the closure? And he maintained that it was the day before. And I just, that's what Tony Kurtz said as well. I'll take him at the word for now. I just find, and I'll simply continue the conversation asking Pat, from your experience as a legislator, do you think that's... I'm not asking to call anybody a liar, but don't you find it odd? Don't you find it... Let's say it's true. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt and say it's true. Don't you find that odd?
I don't know. Is it in the purview of Jay Rothman, the UW system president, to make that call? I mean, does he have to say, Mother, may I, to the legislature on a move like that or not? I'm asking genuinely. If he doesn't have to, and you and I both know this, if you don't have to ask a bunch of politicians for something, are you going to do it? Or are you going to do what you have the responsibility to do if you feel it's the right decision to make?
Don't you think it's odd? Let's say you were still in the legislature and the Senate obviously oversees UW system, their budget at least. Yep. Right. Don't you think it would be odd if when your time you were there, if the system president at the time said, I'm going to close a campus in the UW system and never visited it or talked to a local person there once?
Well, you raise a couple of interesting points there. One is that there actually was some discussion back in the day about closing UW Stevens Point, one of the four-year campuses. So this is not an entirely new discussion point. But the other point that you raised about not visiting it at all, look, I consider Jeff Barrant a dear friend. He was a great staff member for me. I really admire the skills that he has. And good for him for going to that meeting last week. But sure. I'm asking in all seriousness, because I haven't talked to Jeff about it. Why wasn't Jay Rothman at this meeting?
I agree 100% on that one.
There may be a valid answer. I don't know. And I'm not saying Jeff isn't a person who could do the meeting. But when you are talking about closing a campus, however big, however small in this case, That I have to admit that that struck me as odd. But even though it struck me as odd that Jay wasn't there, I again, you know, put full faith in Jeff Barrant, and that if he gives an answer, that, you know, I'll take that answer, take it at face value, because I know that he knows politics as well as you or I. There's no way either one of us knows state politics better than him, you know. So he is doing what he thinks is right and responsible on behalf of Jay Rothman. But that's the guy I think we should all be talking to about the process of setting up UW-Richland Center to essentially fail. And then what do you want to do? Because I think, honestly, and the new point I'd introduce here, is it distracts from the larger issue of these 13 two-year centers, which, and I'm going to paint with a broad brush and make some people mad here, they were set up as overflow because of the baby boom. The four-year campuses couldn't hold everybody. The baby boom is done. We don't have that overflow problem anymore. So what do you want to do with all of them? Unfortunately, this one's been handled in such a way that we're losing sight of the bigger issue. And that's unfortunate.
But maybe somewhat, Pat, but I disagree with you on that, because again, my grandmother was the person, the key point person. There were a lot of other people as well. She was the key point person that helped start that university back in the late 60s, who went to the border regions where women weren't even supposed to be there and helped set it up. And I can tell you it was done to bring higher education to rural areas, not as some overflow thing.
Well, both can be true.
I suppose so. We ran out of time. Pat, we got to do a larger segment than Crossroads, because it's really good. It's good to have a spirited conversation. So we'll have you back.
I can stick around anytime.
We'll do it on another segment. Thanks, Pat. Have a great day. Listen to Pat's show every day, 6 until 8, the Pat Craig Up North News with Pat Craig Lowe here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I really can't stay.
But baby, it's cold outside.
Got to go away.
But baby, it's cold.
It is very cold outside, especially if you're in northern Wisconsin, the home, the original home of Trygve Olsen, who got a little taste of Wisconsin. I understand back in Wisconsin. He's back in Washington, D.C. now. But joining us, as per usual, every Wednesday, it is Trygve Olsen, Wisconsin native, and now senior advisor to the Lincoln Project. Trygve, are you back in D.C. where it's warm?
I am, and I've got a good old-fashioned Wisconsin cold to go with it. So,
you got your River Falls shirt on here. That's fantastic.
I do. It was a gift from my mom. Yeah, River Falls Wildcats, baby.
Look at that. That's fantastic.
I know.
Good for you.
I tell you what, the great part, I don't know if people fully appreciate this, but the great part about growing up in a place like River Falls is, at least it was in the 70s and 80s, everybody is kind of stuck together and...
Yeah.
We even have a Facebook group. Once a Wildcat, always a Wildcat. Pay tribute to people now. Get funeral arrangements,
right?
And stuff like that. It's crazy.
Well, it's good to have you back on the program. Good to have you here after another week. It's been an interesting and busy week in Washington, as per usual. And for those who might be joining us new, tell folks, I always like to spend a minute or so, tell folks a little bit about the Lincoln Project and what you all do.
Yeah, so, you know, we were set up as a group and we strive to be the leading force defending democracy in the United States, which we call it like we see him. We all worked in Republican politics, or most of us. Joe Trippi actually worked at senior levels in Democrat politics. But we came together and we really set out two missions. One was defeating Donald Trump, and the other was defeating Trumpism and extremism more broadly. And we, you know, we had some success in helping with the first one in 2020. But clearly, if you watch what's going on, the second one is a real problem. Because I think anybody who looks at what has transpired, particularly now since Trump has been out and about more, the Republican Party is still firmly under the grasp of that crazy, because no one is wanting to stand up to him. And if people haven't, they should read McKay Coppin's piece in The Atlantic, because it really gets to the heart of it. I think it ran yesterday, about why aren't any Republicans, they want to lead, but they're not willing to stand up to Donald Trump.
And this is where I want to start this morning, Trygve, because, you know, I've heard it from various people around here. I've heard it in state Democratic Party rhetoric. And I've heard it from, you know, Paul Ryan, former Speaker Paul Ryan from Janesville. Republican was on, I'm not sure if it wasn't, it was CNN's show with Jake Tapper, I think, last week. Mm-hmm. And there's this narrative that guys like him, like Paul Ryan, are saying that, look, Trump's over. You know, I was never a Trumper. We're moving on. It's a whole new. And there's this whole feeling that, no, there's no way Trump could come back and be the nominee again. I disagree. And I've heard you say that, too.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. You've already got a bunch of people, and you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and think you get different results. Think about how Trump won in 16 in the Republican primary, right? You had Kasich, you had Rubio, you had Cruz, you had all these guys. And in Wisconsin, you know, Cruz, kind of, they rallied to Cruz. Cruz beat Trump. Problem is that all of them thought, if we get one-on-one with Trump, we can beat Trump. Mm-hmm. And it was classic prisoner's dilemma. They ended up all staying in because they wanted to be that guy. Mm-hmm. And Donald Trump rolled through with, you know, 40% of the support. It just, you know, all the polls that people are talking about that say Trump's support is decreasing. It is decreasing, certainly amongst the sane middle of the American electorate. But within the Republican Party, and particularly within the people who show up and vote to nominate, and in particular in some of the early states like Iowa and South Carolina, he has a solid 35-40%. And when Nikki Haley's now running and Mike Pompeo's talking about running and Mike Pence and Ron DeSantis, who's kind of the great hope, a little bit in the vein that Scott Walker was, in my opinion, in 2016.
That's fantastic.
I like to take my shots at Scotty.
Did Ron DeSantis go to a Florida boys state? I'm not sure.
Probably. It wouldn't surprise me if Tater had done that at one point. But the bottom line is that they all are going to get in this. And what's going to happen here is they're all going to try and out-Trump Trump. And here's the other thing. Is if, let's say Donald Trump got out tomorrow, what's the most important piece? You know, you've run a bunch of campaigns, you've ran as a candidate. If you were running for president on the Republican side, Donald Trump isn't running, what's the most important thing that you want to get?
His supporters.
His endorsement,
yeah,
well, right?
Sure, he has like, endorsement, yeah.
Right. So anybody who thinks that that's not, you know, that that vertical isn't there. The other thing that I think people aren't recognizing is that, you know, if Donald Trump doesn't get the nomination, is he a guy who's going to go away quietly, or is he a guy who's going to burn the house down? You know, and he's got 25-30% of people who go with him.
I don't see him getting out. I think this is a ploy to partly legally as well. I think he has, whether it's true or not, I don't think it's true, but in his head, he's made it true that as long as I'm a presidential candidate, they can't come after, the legality stuff won't stick. So I think he's in it for his own skin. Well, he always has been to a large degree, and his personal ego. I just don't see him getting out unless he's forced to get out somehow legally, if he's indicted or arrested or whatever. Where do you see, does the clock run out to Rigby on this? Do you think that the legal clock, do you think there's somehow that he is indicted or arrested before the 24 election?
You know, I don't have any insight into that. What I don't doubt is he could still win potentially Republican primaries from a jail cell.
I do too.
I mean, it might make him more of a martyr.
Right.
And you know, people, I've done a lot of work in a lot of places, and one of the places that's always kind of stuck with me is Venezuela. You know, Chavez, who was a leftist, you know, former military guy, he actually was in jail at one point and got out. And it was being sent to jail that made him, for his supporters, the sort of martyr that propelled him to the presidency. And then, of course, he immediately started disbanding democracy. Venezuela actually had a long history of being sort of the great democracy of South America. I think that holds for Trump. I don't think there's any reason to think, you know, his hardcore supporters are going to believe it's all contrived anyway. So they don't believe elections. Why would they believe in the judicial system?
Yeah, totally agree. I agree. It makes him a martyr if they arrest him, and he gives. Of course, he's the ultimate. Any publicity is good publicity, right? He doesn't Correct. Care as long as his name is in the news cycle. That's really all he really cares about, I think.
Yeah, and I don't even think he cares about them spelling it right. Otherwise, right. He would be running around as John Barron at different points in his career.
I like to use this audio clip of Lindsey Graham, was on Fox News this week. Aaron, when you have that queued up, let me know.
I can play it now if you want.
Oh, it's all set? All right, let's set this. So this is, because I want to talk about Lindsey Graham, who was on Fox News and kind of out of the blue, suddenly endorsed. Because they were talking about Ron DeSantis, for the governor of Florida, who, is, as Trevi said, is, by all accounts, is getting ready to run for president. And suddenly, this is what sitting Senator Lindsey Graham had to say.
Now, we need to get ready for a real spirited contest. Now, why Trump? Now, you mentioned like DeSantis. If you try to tell me that Ron DeSantis is not a good governor in Florida, I'm not going to listen to you. If you try to tell me Mike Pompeo is not qualified to be president, I'm not going to listen to you because I think he is. I am for Trump, not because of the flaws of anybody else. I'm for Donald Trump because I know what I'm going to get. We need somebody that on day one can get this country back on track, that can secure our border and bring order out of chaos, somebody the Russians and the Chinese fear, somebody that can take the fight to the terrorists. The Abraham Accords, the result of Donald Trump impressing the Arabs and the Israelis. He is the best solution to the problems we face, not because of the flaws of others, but because what I know he can do. And I'm telling your listeners right now, when you hear, I like Trump policies, but I'm ready for somebody new, there are no Trump policies without Donald Trump.
What do you make of that, Trigby?
Well, some of it has to be taken with who the source is. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, I know Lindsey pretty well because Lindsey used to be John McCain's best buddy. When I worked for IRI and McCain was the chairman of the International Republican Institute, whenever he was in Eastern Europe or kind of in the general vicinity, he'd want to meet with Belarusians or Ukrainians or whatever, and I would take them to wherever McCain was, and Lindsey would usually be there carrying McCain's luggage, or I don't know what his role was. But I wish I had the clip of Lindsey talking about Alexander Lukashenko, the autocratic ruler of Belarus, needing to honor the results of elections and the will of the people, given what Lindsey Graham himself was saying about Trump in the election. I can't explain Lindsey's behavior and why he went from militantly anti-Trump to basically Trump's cabana boy in the United States Senate, other than I know this, we've talked about it before on your show, Todd. You know, Tommy Thompson was so smart when he used to say there's only two kinds of politicians, those who want to do and those who want to be. Lindsey Graham is one who wants to be. And to be the senator from South Carolina, he feels like he has to, you know, plant kisses on Donald Trump's backside, I guess.
We don't have to get into the details of the rumor mill out there, but like, can I simply just ask you, I'm not trying to divulge things you can't divulge or whatever, but there are certainly people out there that feel the only reason that Lindsey Graham, because you said he was the guy that said, if we nominate Trump, we'll be destroyed, basically. Yeah. And then he went to, like you say, I mean, being Trump's cabana boy. And now, even after an insurrection, and he stood on the Senate floor on the night of the insurrection and basically disavowed himself at Trump again, and now he's right back here endorsing the guy. So the question that keeps coming up is, do the Russians or someone else have something on Lindsey? Is that why he's doing this? Is he basically being blackmailed?
That's one theory. That's a theory. I just think, to be honest, like from my interactions with him and watching him in person up close, I just think he's a guy who wants to be, and he feels like the best way for him to get attention is to get himself close to those who are getting lots of attention. Hence McCain, hence his run for president when he really didn't have much of a shot, and hence his going 180 on Donald Trump. But he's not the only one. I mean, Rand Paul did, Marco did, like all these guys. And to be honest, at the end of the day, they just are showing themselves. They want to be somebody. They're really not running to do things. And they're you know, their appeasement in the process is a real threat to American democracy.
Well, that's just it. If it was just like, hey, I want some PR and I want to be the guy who clings to people and put my finger to the wind, that's one thing. But their actions have consequences that are putting democracy at risk. And that's
yeah,
the
crazy part. I mean, Lindsay is the big advocate for democracy around the world. Right. He's on IRI's board, right? And yet he's calling election officials in Georgia, telling them, asking them what's up with the vote.
Crazy doesn't stop with Lindsey Graham. There's also Ron DeSantis and George Santos and many more. We'll talk about it all with our guest, Trygve Olson. You're listening to the Todd Oswalt Show on the Civic Media or Radio Network.
Cold. Baby, it's cold
the Todd Oswalt Show. It is 8:33 on the first day of February 2023, into a brand new month. But the same insight, the same knowledge, the same great comments from our guest, Trygve Olson, who joins us every Wednesday. He is a senior advisor to the Lincoln Project, the group, as Trygve said, mostly former Republicans, a couple of Democrats as well, whose mission was, number one, to defeat Donald Trump in 2020, which they helped do successfully, and then the larger picture, to defeat Trumpism. And Trygve, from our days in politics, so one of the things that I've always, you know, told people is, you know, when you see the opposition attack you, you know you're having an effect. Because if you're not being, there's no reason to be attacked if they're not hurting you. But when you start seeing the negative ads run against you, you know that you're starting to get to them. And this week, Donald Trump on his social media platform attacked the Lincoln Project and said basically how irrelevant you were and how you're going to be defeated. But you know, if he thought you were truly irrelevant, he wouldn't take time to call you out.
Nah, I mean, that's true. I'll tell you, you know, there was a time early on, well, maybe the first time, and Rick and Reed and some of the other guys, they were getting this earlier than I did because I kind of stayed below the radar for a while. But the first time I came home and said to my wife that Donald Trump was suing us, threatening to sue us, the Lincoln Project and us as individuals. She got this funny look, and I said, oh, don't worry about it. The lawyers say he just threatens this stuff all the time. So I don't know. You know, yes, we live in his head rent-free and have for a long time. And it's, you know, we have a certain, we're like Liam Neeson. We have a certain set of skills that have been acquired over a long period of time. We're a problem for people like Donald Trump. And the truth of the matter is, you know, my role in the Lincoln Project, really from the outset, wasn't really about the work that I'd done in the States. It was a lot more about my understanding of autocrats and time spent, you know, having Putin and Lukashenko and people like that go after me. So it never really bothered, Trump going after me never really bothered me that much. I will say when, you know, there was a speech in the Russian Duma by the head of the FSB.
Oop, hang on, Trygve. I think we check your headset. We haven't, we lost your mic there for a second, if you can hear us.
Did you?
There you go.
Can you hear me now?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Oh, so sorry.
You said.
No, I was just, I was saying, you know, the first time the head of the FSB, you know, talked about me, that was a little more disconcerting.
Yeah, I would think it would be. You've certainly lived an interesting.
You know, I'll tell you what John McCain said though.
Yeah.
Well, McCain, of course, knew about that because he's the chair of IRI, and McCain pulls me aside and he's like, "Boy, you're judged by the stature of your enemies. You're doing a great job. Great job." And you are a pain in the ass.
but in a good way. You know, when you're that way to autocrats and fascists around the world, you know you're doing something right, right?
Exactly.
This guy does not reach the level of Putin or anybody else on an autocrat. But what a weirdly fascinating and just disturbing dude, this George Santos, the congressman that got elected from New York, and basically has lied about it's a political version of catch me if you can, and he lied about everything to get where he's at. Now, yesterday, apparently in the Republican caucus, he voluntarily relinquished being on any committees in this Congress, but said he's not going to resign. What do you make of this guy?
I don't know what to make of him. I mean, the guy lied about everything.
It's incredible that he got elected.
Here's what I don't understand is what was the Democrat Congressional Committee doing not getting this stuff on the guy?
Right. I mean, literally, you could have a college student take 2 hours on a laptop and find out more than the DNC did.
Right. Like, honestly, if you're a donor, I don't understand that at all. I don't know. I mean, this guy, and the crazy part is, honestly, I think we talked about this before, but or maybe, I don't know, it might have been, you know, it's crazy because I play ice hockey with a bunch of guys, and they, every once in a while, it's, you know, always interesting to me when they start picking my brain about politics, because they all know what I do, and we rarely talk about politics. George Santos is one of the things that they all brought up, right? Like, because everybody is just like, what's this all about? Because it's so strange. And, you know, I don't know. As I was saying to those guys, I just think if you applied for any other job and had done that, you would be fired on the spot. But Kevin McCarthy can't fire him because then he's down to two.
Yeah.
Right. So like Kevin McCarthy can push him out.
Sure. But he just can't.
Because
the other problem you've got is Matt Gaetz. And before we go to that, you know, I watch I watch John Stewart's podcast called The Problem. It's a great, great show. And, you know, they were talking about this, a podcast or two about George Santos. I thought John Stewart made a really relevant and great point. He said, the thing I have to keep reminding myself is I made a mistake on Trump. I looked at him as a buffoon. I made all kinds of great comedy about him. He was a great subject for Comedy Matter. Right. But I underestimated what he could do. And he said, I don't want to make the same mistake with people like George Santos and Matt Gaetz. Matt Gaetz, and you know, I'm not sure how far we want to go into the weeds here, but he is accused now. Apparently, there's been reporting and lots of sourcing on this that he is, you know, he's married to a woman. He's allegedly involved in an affair with a male staffer, his press secretary, and there's all other kinds of allegations about this. He's looking at possibly running for an exploratory run for Florida governor, but again, if you lose George Santos and Matt Gaetz. Now you're effectively down to a two-seat majority, and it doesn't take a whole lot for Hakeem Jeffries, the Democratic leader, to say, hey, guys, who over there wants a committee chairmanship or anything else? I'd like to flip the House.
Right. I've never been able to figure out with Matt Gaetz, is he running for – you know, a contract on Fox News, like right. as a commentator, like what he's attempting to do. He comes from a really prominent political family in Florida. You know, his dad was like, I think he was like Senate leader forever.
Wow. I didn't know
like
that.
The Fred Risser of the, right. except the opposite of Red Fred. Yeah. If Fred was such a good guy, by
fantastic,
the way.
Fantastic.
Didn't agree with that guy on anything. I mean, that guy was a liberal of the old school, but what a nice, nice man.
And a protector of the institution, which I always respected.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Matt Gaetz, definitely not a protector of the institution. I thought his interview, he's going on MSNBC talking about secret agreements. Like, he knows full well what he's doing. Say what you want about Matt Gaetz, but that guy is good at getting attention for himself. And he's good at using the platforms that he has available of crazy to precipitate chaos. He also, you know, he's going after, you know, he professes to be, he'll use Reagan and on the one hand, and then on the other, he's like, we need to stop sending any assistance to Ukraine. We should take Russia's side, blah, blah, blah. there's no ideological underpinnings to Matt Gaetz. And this is what people have to understand about the Republican Party. I think most, and this is true of my buddies, you know, I was back drinking beer with them in Wisconsin. They're like, they have an intellectual foundation, and they are conservatives, and it's a conservative foundation, but it's traditional conservatism, right? It's limited government, like just leave us alone. You know, I want to be able to do what I do. I'm happy to pay my taxes for good schools. You know, I'm involved in the community, all these things. They believe we should be supporting Ukraine. What they need to understand is the most of the leadership of the Republican Party, certainly of the Donald Trump wing, is not founded on any sort of the similar ideology to what you have of traditional conservatism. This is not Reagan conservatism. This is not Paul Ryan conservatism. This isn't even Scott Walker conservatism. Mm-hmm. This is just flat out kind of craziness.
It's mean-spirited. And here's the thing about the whole Gates thing that gets me, Trigvi. As a kid growing up in Southwest Wisconsin, involved in the Republican Party since I was 12, and was in the closet until I was 38. And you grow up hearing these things that you're lesser than, that there's something wrong with you. And in today's Republican politics, particularly in Florida, don't even want to use the word gay in classrooms, trying to ban books that help kids understand themselves. And you have teenage suicide increasing across this country because kids struggle to accept who they are. And that is precipitated by the current leadership of the Republican Party. And then you have a guy like Matt Gaetz, who is reportedly, allegedly, living a double lifestyle. And it's the hypocrisy that just drives me up a wall.
Well, Matt Schlapp. Look at the allegations against Matt, right? And there's a lot of smoke around that fire. I just think this is the thing, and some of this is shaped by personal experience of a friend of mine. When people aren't allowed to go out or don't feel comfortable to go live their truths, what ends up happening is a whole lot of people end up potentially getting hurt really badly, unintendedly. And The reality is Matt Gaetz should live whatever life Matt Gaetz wants to live. But the idea that he is going to instill crazy and chaos on everyone else because it's possible that he hasn't felt comfortable living his truths is really sort of disgusting. And the fact that the Republican Party has become so mean-spirited. And there has been a vein of that in the Republican Party for a long time. I mean, you and I both have Steve Gunderson in common. I mean, Bob Dornan, some of the stuff that he was doing to Steve, just absolutely awful, right? And that was 30 years ago.
And for those who don't
know, it's gotten even worse. That's become the mainstream.
For those who don't know, real quick, Steve, of course, represented the 3rd Congressional District for 16 years. He was the first openly gay Republican to be reelected in the Congress. And there was a guy, his nickname was B1 Bob Dornan from California, who basically outed Steve on the floor of the U.S. Congress. And it was just a nasty, mean-spirited guy.
But it was awful.
But to that point, Trigvi, even Newt Gingrich, who was Speaker at the time, he was supportive of Steve, and you can say what you want about Gingrich. There's a whole lot we could say, but even at that time, in the 90s, there was this kind of, there was a line you don't cross. That line has been obliterated.
Yeah, totally blown up. Totally blown up, and but there also is the double standard to it, because if you look at the allegations as it relates to Gaetz, and you look at what the allegations are with Matt Schlapp and some of the other things that are circling around, it's not good.
It's right here in Wisconsin. The new representative from Shawnee area, just west of Green Bay. This guy was arrested and taken to trial over strangling or trying to strangle one of his Latino workers and yelling at them in Spanish and going nuts. And then basically came out himself, the candidate did, and said, "There's a tape out there of me performing oral sex on a dude. I had a lapse of Christianity, and this was just a lapse." Living a completely different lifestyle, he was banned from the Shawnee County Republican Party headquarters, and he got elected. He got elected as a sitting state representative. This is the kind of hypocrisy that's out there. And again,
it's terrible.
It's just the mean-spiritedness of the whole thing.
It is. It's kind of to my point about traditional conservative, right? Like, I became a conservative in part because I don't think government is the answer and it should stay out of people's lives.
Right.
And I'll tell you, I consider myself pro-life. Mm-hmm. And some of that shaped by personal experiences of having our first child being stillborn, right? And so I think the idea of late term abortions, never
right.
would I want to be a part of that. That said, I have two daughters, and the idea that government, state governments are now just going to be able telling them what they can and can't do drives me crazy. And the same would be true about who they want to marry. And that's consistent. I think it's a consistent set of principles. I wouldn't want them to have an abortion ever. I hope they never do. I hope they wouldn't make that choice. But if they did make that choice, they should. It should be their choice, not my choice. Not, and certainly not some government bureaucrat saying that. But that is really what the Republican Party has become. It's become the party of big, intrusive government, not libertarian government. Stay out of people's lives.
Well said. Back with another segment with Trevi Olson, Lincoln Project, after this. You're listening to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show. It is 8:50 on a Wednesday morning, hump day, the 1st of February, 2023. Our guest, the senior advisor to the Lincoln Project, Trevi Olson. As always, we appreciate you taking the time for us and helping us explain and understand national and state issues when it comes to politics and government and occasionally sports as well. A couple of issues.
There's big news on that front today, Todd. Did you see? Well, it impacts the Packers too. Tom Brady.
I saw that. Well, let's break
really
the news.
Retiring.
It just came across. Tell us.
Well, Tom Brady is apparently retiring this time for real. Yeah. And you know what that means? It means Aaron Rodgers will not retire, because there is no way that Aaron Rodgers' ego could stand having to be up on the Hall of Fame stage with Tom Brady, which means the Packers can trade him to somebody and pick up a couple of second first-round picks, hopefully.
Now, see, this is a fantastic topic. The host of Packer Outright Opinions on this network, Jason Hafeman, has been on this show, and he has a slight – he thinks that, you know, because what you just said is kind of like conventional wisdom. He doesn't want to go out with Tom Brady, but Jason said that he thinks that maybe he does, because he wants to be put in that same level as Tom Brady. He wants to stand, be in the same class in the Hall of Fame, and say that the two greats went out together and they were equal. And even though, you know, Rodgers only has one Super Bowl and Brady has a gazillion, you know, he thinks that maybe he wants to be equated with him. But I don't know.
Listen. I can tell you, I am quite confident that Aaron Rodgers has some pretty good PR people around him. That's abundantly clear. And I know somebody who's done work for Tom Brady, who's one of the best there is, at least in political stuff. If Aaron Rodgers' PR people believe that they can go into the Hall of Fame with Tom Brady, and that Tom Brady won't, and his career won't be compared directly to Aaron Rodgers, and that it just doesn't quite stack up. Because the NFL is the ultimate meritocracy, and you're judged by one thing and one thing only. And it isn't what your passer rating was. It's, you know.
How many rings is
Aaron Rodgers going to want to stand up there when Brady's going like this? And he'll have his ring on his middle finger, I'm sure.
Probably.
There's nowhere else for him to have it.
Yeah, we'll see. I tend to agree with you. I think he wants to play again one more year at least. But we'll see if it's with the Packers or not. I mean,
maybe your resident Packer expert and I should have a debate.
I think that would be great. He would love that. He's well, I'll tell him that. We'll have you on Packer Outright Opinions. I'll suggest that to him. A couple of things. We got about 5-6 minutes left here, Trigby. Couple of things. Number one, the debt ceiling out in D.C. And then also a guy that you and I know pretty well, Brian Schimming, who is now the chairman of the Republican Party in the state of Wisconsin, came out on Wisconsin Public Radio this week. And surprise, surprise, the Shim Sham man is now all for early voting in Wisconsin. So take your pick of whichever one of those you want to start with.
I'll let Schimming rest for a little bit, and then we can get going on Brian. So debt ceiling, huge deal. Mm-hmm. Huge deal, because it has real world consequences and impact. I am all for limited government and less spending. Fiscal responsibility is something that is another part of the reason why I consider myself a conservative. But tying that to the debt ceiling one of the foundational things, full faith and credit that people have all around the world in the U.S. dollar, tying those two things together and risking going over a cliff is incredibly dangerous. And in fact, it's an assault on one of the things that's made America great. The fact that people all around the world, when they
when they have some extra money, they don't put it in Nigerian lira. They try and get some Benjamins to put it in. That's really what they're messing with. And Americans benefit from lower income tax rates and all kinds of things because of that. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't have a debate about all the spending that goes on. We should have a debate about all the spending that goes on because we spend a lot of money on stuff that probably isn't worthwhile. I will also point out, since somebody will probably say, well, yeah, foreign aid, 25% of the budget. It's 0.25%, not 25%. There is some waste, fraud, and abuse. You're not going to balance the budget with that either. But yeah, the debt ceiling, it's a real thing. And honestly, I don't know how they get themselves out of this box. And McCarthy's in a box on this because he went and told all the big money people, I'll be the adult in the room. And now he might be the guy overseeing taking us off a real cliff.
I'm not sure if you caught the interview. I forget again, my old mind forgets where I see this stuff. But McCarthy was interviewed this week and he brought this up that he thought that he and President Biden could find a solution forward. And he blamed kind of the miscommunication and the problems on Biden's staff. You and I have seen this from executives before, where the executives sometimes are you know, cloistered, and it's the staffers who mix it up and get into it. How much of this breakdown is going to be staffers, and how much of it is actually going to be Biden and McCarthy?
That's a great question. I think at the end of the day, it's going to be Biden and McConnell pulling McCarthy through. Because remember, when Bo Biden died, the only Republican that Joe Biden asked to come to the funeral was Mitch McConnell. Like, they are really friends. And people saw that when they did the event in Kentucky. Mitch McConnell will not want the U.S. to go over the cliff because Mitch McConnell actually is the adult typically in the room, even though a lot of people don't like him on the Republican side or the Democrat side. Democrats don't like him because he wins. Republicans don't like him because I don't know why, because maybe they don't like to win. yeah. McConnell, but I don't know, you know, their hands are kind of tied because McCarthy's got to get the votes. And to get the votes, he's going to have Democrats. I think the adults will prevail, but I also think that, you know, they could take us over the edge.
Does Biden talk to Hakeem Jeffries and say, look, you got to get me whatever, you know, 5-10 people, whatever it's going to take in order to get this done?
I think it's going to be the other way. I think he's probably talking to McConnell saying, how do you get 10 Republicans to vote with the Democrats to do it?
Well, that's interesting.
How do you get the corporate world to put pressure on McCarthy to let the vote happen? Now, that might be the end of McCarthy's speakership. I mean, that's right. Possible. That's because, you know, I mean, I think eventually McCarthy eventually at some point probably doesn't make it all the way through. And then I don't know how they elect a speaker. But
I think it's very I didn't realize that McConnell and Biden were really, really close friends like that. That's insightful.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So. They are. Speaking of old friends.
We got about a minute and a half left.
Shimming's all for voter for early voting.
That's what he came out here. The direct quote is: Republicans tend to be a little bit more election day voters. But I've said to people, this is Shimming. Look, you can't go into election day 200,000 votes down in the early vote and expect to have to make it up in 13 hours. So we're encouraging an early vote.
Well, for any of the diehard Trump loyalists who listen to Todd and I on Wednesdays just to swear at your radio, I would be calling the Wisconsin Republican Party right now and ask why Ryan O'Brien Shimming is supporting such kind of voter fraud. I mean, really, if you are a MAGA Republican listening to this, and I did tune my mother's radio to this station and set the alarm so it's supposed to go off. So, Mom, if you're listening, you should be calling Brian. I know you know him. And say, stop being such a rhino.
Well, on that, we got to go. Always great to have you here, Trey V. Have a great week. See you next Wednesday.
Yep. See you Wednesday.
We're back.